On Tuesday, Donald Trump met with the leading lights of the conservative Christian movement in this country, an event that moderator Mike Huckabee called a seminal moment and the turning point of taking Trump to the presidency. While a veteran of the moral majority movement, Mike Farris labeled it the end of the Christian right. Now, one thing seems clear. Of the estimated 1,000 strong attendees at Trump's meeting, a number have been born again, ready to have their faith-based activism serve the Trump agenda rather than the other way around. I'm happy to be able to welcome investigative journalist Sarah Posner back to State of Belief Radio.
Thanks for having me.
So, Sarah, what did you find most noteworthy about the event?
Well, it was the leakiest meeting of this sort that I have seen covering three election cycles of the religious right vetting Republican presidential candidates. Mm. The audio of the meeting was leaked to me and to other news outlets. That's how Yahoo News was able to provide the world with a transcript of it. The leakiness of it demonstrated just discontent with what was happening. I mean, I think the fact that audio of the meeting was leaked was intended by some of the attendees to expose what was wrong in their view with the meeting, that Trump was attempting to cater to this constituency and offering nothing but platitudes, really, and that many of them were accepting that and saying, perhaps, if not outright endorsing him, saying that progress had been made in making Trump acceptable to religious conservatives. Mm-hmm. After the meeting was over, the Trump campaign released a list of people who had been appointed to an evangelical executive advisory board, whatever that means, right? And so that's not an outright endorsement. Mm-hmm. But some of the people on the list had already endorsed Trump long before, like Jerry Falwell Jr. and Mark Burns, a televangelist from North Carolina. But, you know, clearly if one hadn't endorsed Trump already, being on this advisory board was a clear signal, even if they weren't using the word endorse.
What about the attack on Hillary Clinton's religion?
Well, I think that, you know, in general, Trump's attacks on Hillary Clinton this week involved a lot of projection, right? Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of projection about her alleged corruption and her alleged unsuitability to be commander-in-chief and also her religion. You know, so it was funny to hear Trump say, well, we don't really know anything about Hillary's religion, which is so far from the truth. I mean, there's mm-hmm. been so much ink spilled about her lifelong Methodism mm-hmm. and even about her reaching out to the fellowship or the family and going to prayer meetings with them. I mean, the historical record on Hillary Clinton's religion and deep commitment to her Methodist faith is, there's a huge public record on that. Mm-hmm. There is not a public record on Trump's religion. I mean, it's very, very thin. Mm-hmm. I think that what he was trying to do there was trying to pull the same sort of thing that Republicans have hinted at for a long time about Obama, that he's not really a Christian, or maybe he's a Muslim, or maybe he's an atheist. I think it worked with the fever swamps with Obama, you know, who's also a Christian. But it doesn't really work with Clinton because there's no Jeremiah Wright tape. There's no birtherism. I mean, like, you know, she's like such a straight and narrow Methodist that it's laughable that he would attack her on that basis.
After what we heard from Trump on Tuesday, Sarah, I've got to wonder, is there any part of the Constitution that he actually agrees with?
So, you know, I think that Trump's biggest pander to this group was his discussion of the Johnson Amendment, which is the 1954 amendment to the Internal Revenue Code, which prohibits tax-exempt churches from using their tax-exempt resources to endorse political candidates. Now, this is a big deal with the Christian right. They charge that it's a violation of their free speech rights for pastors not to be able to endorse candidates. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is not about your free speech rights. You are perfectly free to actually go across the street from your church property and take out a bullhorn and endorse a presidential candidate. Mm-hmm. You just can't do it with tax-exempt resources. You can't do it on your church letterhead. Mm-hmm. You can't do it when you're giving a sermon in the pulpit. But you can go out in public and do it as a private citizen. There's no infringement on your free speech. It's really about regulating the use of tax-exempt resources for politicking. Mm-hmm. It seemed like of all the religious liberty concerns that the Christian right has, which include the Johnson Amendment, but also include things like contraception coverage and religious exemptions to LGBT rights and things like that, that the only one that Trump focused on was one that may impact his presidency or his quest for the presidency. So basically he was saying to them, the only religious liberty issue that I really care about here is whether you guys can endorse me or not. Mm-hmm. All the other stuff that you're concerned about, I'm not even going to talk about. And the fact that the people who came out of that meeting cheerleading for Trump didn't see through that was just sort of comical. Mm-hmm.
Could he honestly believe that there is a lack of religious freedom in this country, or was that just pandering to that specific audience?
Well, you know, here's a guy who has called for the blatant and unconstitutional violation of the religious rights of Muslims. So his understanding of what the actual religious liberty protections in the Constitution are is obviously deeply flawed. And to the extent that he understands the nuances of, you know, the contraception coverage cases and the religious exemptions and whether bakers and photographers should be permitted to refuse service to LGBT couples and that sort of thing, he evinces absolutely zero understanding of those issues from any political viewpoint. He exhibits no evidence that he understands that these have even been issues that have been litigated and talked about and been just the focal point of religious right activism for about 3 years. Mm-hmm. He demonstrates no knowledge of that, and so that's why I find it surprising that these religious leaders would just say, oh, he's on our side in religious liberty, mm-hmm. when all he's done really is talk about how when he's president, he'll make it okay to say Merry Christmas again, and that he will apparently single-handedly reverse a piece of legislation that he disagrees with.
Mm-hmm. So, Sarah, does a cynical interpretation actually offer some hope that this is all just for Trump?
I think that it's for Trump. I mean, obviously it benefits Trump, or Trump thinks it benefits him. But I think that this is also a struggle by these religious conservative leaders to maintain their relevance when they basically have a candidate who won the Republican primary without doing anything to pander to them. In fact, did a lot the opposite of pandering to them. So I think that it's kind of everybody involved with this is using it to pad their resume, if you will, mm-hmm. or bolster their relevance, because Trump made it pretty clear that he could win the primary without their help. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to convince him now that he can't win the general election without their help, but he might lose the general election despite their help. So mm-hmm. it's kind of a complicated calculus yeah. that, like, might at the end of the day involve everybody just looking completely irrelevant, which is what they're all trying to avoid, if that makes sense.
You know, this really fits perfectly with some of the things that you've said and written in the past about why far-right religious leaders were supporting Trump. You've said that ultimately they're just sick of losing and will find a way to make a winning candidate acceptable to themselves. Is that part or all of what we saw happening last Tuesday?
What you have is a constituency that has proved in the last several election cycles to be an essential element of the Republican base. So when, for example, George W. Bush won the presidency in 2004 when he won re-election, 36% of his support, of his votes, came from white evangelicals. Mm-hmm. So obviously the Republican Party needs them, but also they need to feel needed, because if they don't feel that way or they don't have the sense that they're needed, then they've lost their ability to place pressure on a future president. Mm-hmm. So here they are trying to make themselves relevant to the election, but also potentially indispensable to President Trump, right? Mm-hmm. So if he were to win, see, if they don't support him and he were to win anyway, then he doesn't need to listen to them about judges mm-hmm. or abortion rights or anything like that. But if they come out in force and he wins, and they can make an argument that he won because they mobilized for him, then they maintain their seat at the table. So it's really about them trying to find that space where they're still relevant, mm-hmm. and it doesn't matter to them whether he really is the sort of candidate that fits their mold or not. They make a lot of different excuses and rationalizations for why they're supporting him. And they've gotten a lot of heat from people like mm-hmm. Mike Farris and others who are basically in the Never Trump camp.
Was there anything else in this meeting between candidate Trump and the evangelical leaders that we should highlight that haven't mentioned yet?
He was asked about immigration, mm-hmm. and nobody really held his feet to the fire. There was no evidence that there was a strong pro-immigration reform contingent at this meeting, and there is such a contingent among evangelicals, but they didn't seem to either be there in force or their questions didn't make it through the screening that I understand happened for questions to be asked of the candidate. He paid a lot of lip service to their issues, but he also rambled a lot. If you listen to the audio recordings, which are, you know, now out there on the web, he's asked pretty specific questions, and he doesn't give very specific answers, and he wanders off a lot, and there's no follow-up, nobody's really pressing him on anything, and it's hard to believe that people with supposedly very strong convictions about these various values or issues were satisfied with some of these answers that were vague, rambling, incoherent at times. So it was pretty fascinating to mm-hmm. see this.
What else are you paying close attention to at this point in the campaign?
Where the Never Trump evangelicals are they really going to come up with an independent candidate to run against Trump? What's their end game there? And then what's really going to happen to the evangelicals who aren't in the Never Trump camp, but they're not in the cheerleading Trump camp, and they're feeling pretty ambivalent? And whether they'd end up going with Trump because of their antipathy to Clinton, which I think is a lot of what's driving many of these evangelicals over to the Trump side. Mm-hmm. But I think that all of this will have ramifications for the movement. I think it's going to have ramifications for their cohesiveness and their previous unwillingness to publicly criticize each other. I think there's going to be more recriminations than we've seen in the past.
Sarah Posner is an investigative journalist at the intersection of religion and politics. Her writing appears in Rolling Stone, The Washington Post, The New York Times, The Huffington Post, and elsewhere. Sarah is the author of God's Prophets, Faith, Fraud, and the Republican Crusade for Values Voters. Sarah, the updated version of your book is writing itself right before your eyes. Thank you for being with us on State of Belief Radio. It's always helpful and insightful and enjoyable.
Thank you, Welton.